Did he say a range war?
I don't know, but if it comes about, we'll all hear about it sooner rather than later.
It won't reach into town?
It could, if the two sides happen to be here in Big Rock at the same time, like they were earlier.
Whatever it is, they better settle the problem without shooting up Big Rock in the process. Business is good. Everything is going well for me, for a change. And selfish or not, damn it, I'd like for it to stay that way. You look worried. You feel like you should do something about whatever this is.
Oh, it's more of a problem for Monty and the county sheriff over at Red Cliff. But when you carry a badge and you see trouble building up right in front of you, you can't help but feel like you ought to try to head it off. I'll go talk to Monty later, try to find out more about what's going on. Right now, I'd rather just visit with you for a while longer and try not to think about what might happen.
That sounds good to me.
Blaze lifted her coffee cup and made a little toasting motion toward him. They continued chatting. The whiskey was having an effect on the cowboys sitting across the room. Several of them had calmed down and started to look sleepy. The others were still agitated, but less so. It wouldn't take much to get them all riled up again, Bryce knew, but with any luck, maybe that wouldn't happen. Several more customers had drifted in as the middle of the day approached. All of them were townsmen, Bryce noted, clerks and shopkeepers and livery stable hostlers and freight company loaders. Except for one, a well-dressed middle-aged man in a tweed suit and black hat. Bryce didn't recall ever seeing him before. The stranger went to the bar and nodded to Charlie.
I'll have a brandy, if you please, my friend.
Not much call for brandy around here. But I've got a bottle of cognac here, if that'll do.
Cognac. And yes, thank you, that will do just fine. Oh, and I'll have a beer with it, too.
Now that I can fix you up with, no problem.
Blaze? What's wrong?
Nothing. Nothing's wrong. Why do you ask?
Well, you look like you just seen a ghost. Or worse.
Oh, no, nothing like that. A little spot of indigestion, maybe. I'm fine now.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Tony Mullen, owner of the Ace of Diamonds, pushed through the bat wings and spotted his men sitting at the large table.
How'd it go, boss?
Are we gonna have it out with those Box RG varmints?
Not today, boys. We talked it over with Lewis Jensen, and he thinks the Ace of Diamonds will win if it ever comes down to a court case.
Court? Was the time we didn't bother trying to settle things in court.
I know, but those days are gone, Ori, and we have to at least try to do things legally and proper. If they push us too much, though, well then, we have a legal right to defend ourselves, don't we?
Now you're talking, boss.
Hey, maybe we better be careful what we say. There's a lawman in here.
What are you... Good morning, Miss Warfield. You look as lovely as ever.
I know that's not true, Mr. Mullen, but I appreciate the sentiment.
I suppose you heard that discussion, Marshal?
Most of it. Enough to know that there's trouble between you and Roy Gardner at the Box RG.
The law's on my side. Lewis Jensen said so.
Well, without casting any aspersions on Lewis's legal education, I don't work for him. I work for Chief Marshal Long, and above him, the U.S. Department of Justice.
Which doesn't have any jurisdiction over a local boundary dispute.
No, it doesn't. So if you're worried about me sticking my nose into your business, don't be. As long as you keep the peace, I won't have any reason to get involved. But if people start getting hurt, I'm still a lawman and I'll be duty-bound to try to put a stop to it.
If there's any trouble, it won't be Ace of Diamonds that fires the first shot. You can count on that. But like I was just telling my men, they have a legal right to defend themselves.
That they do. See that it doesn't go beyond that.
That'll be up to Roy Gardner.
Mullen nodded again to Blaze, then went back to his men. He jerked his head for them to follow him and started toward the door.
I don't care what he says. There's going to be trouble. I could feel it in my bones.
I don't feel well, and it's not just my bones. I hope you'll excuse me. I'm going back upstairs for a while before things get busier later in the day.
Sure, that's fine. If there's anything I can do to help...
No, I'll be fine. Thank you, anyway. I should have known.
Oh, hello, my dear. Well, don't just stand there. Come inside. Close the door.
How did you get in here?
I knew you'd have your quarters up here. You always talked about owning and living in a saloon. So I came up the rear stairs, and I looked around until I found a locked door.
As you said, the door was locked.
You don't really believe that any lock in a cow country town like this would keep me out for very long, do you?
No. You always were good at breaking and entering.
Oh, now I never had to put much effort into that with you, did I?
What do you want, Martin?
Well, I wanted to see you again, my dear. I missed you. My life just wasn't the same without you.
Don't you come near me. I'm warning you, Martin.
Settle down, Blaze. There's no need for you to get upset. I understand why you left me. Hell, if the situation had been reversed, I might have done the same thing. Oh, and if you're worried that I might be holding a grudge, you can ease your mind. Although, you know, that was a considerable amount of money you took with you when you disappeared. And not all of it was rightfully yours.
I felt like I earned it.
Well, that's all water under the bridge, as they say. And you have made a fresh start here. Well, I admire you for that. But from now on, you and I are going to make a fresh start, too.
No, absolutely not. We're finished, Martin. If you need money so you can move on somewhere else, I'm sure we can come to an agreement.
Now you wound me. After all this time, do you honestly believe that I care more about money than I do about you?
You always seemed to before.
As always, you misinterpret my intentions. Whatever has been damaged between us in the past, I want to repair it now so that we can be together.
You just want to share what I'm building here, what I've already built.
Considering that you built it with my money, well, that seems only fair.
I told you I earned that money. Now get out.
Oh, you could at least see your way clear to letting me enjoy a brief reunion.
That's far enough.
What an adorable little pistol. Do you honestly mean to say that you'd shoot me?
If you try to attack me, I will.
No, Blaze. Have I ever forced you into anything? Now, as I recall, it was you who volunteered to do anything I wanted if I would rescue you from those terrible straits in which you found yourself. Anything at all, I believe you said.
That was a long time ago.
Well, not that long, really. And if you're being truthful, you'll have to admit that I was never less than gentle and considerate with you, now was I?
The things you made me do.
Most of the things we did, you came up with the idea for them. You know that as well as I do. I'm starting to lose my patience here, Blaze. I've come to you and made no demands. And you know I could have. I have every legal right. I'm sorry, my dear. But as I said, I have every right to this.
Martin, no!
You'll soon come around to my way of thinking. And if you don't, well, it doesn't really matter, does it? I'm your husband, and I'll take what I want.
Deborah, my dear, you are the most ravishing creature I have ever seen.
Harrison Wheeler cupped Blaze's chin and leaned closer to her so he could peer into her brown eyes.
Deborah!
Harrison, you're drunk.
Drunk on your beauty, Deborah, that's what I am. You're the most intoxicating woman I have met in my life.
In truth, he had had quite a bit to drink. During dinner at this expensive, luxurious restaurant, Blaze had subtly encouraged Wheeler to have the waiter keep the champagne flowing. She had plenty of practice at not actually drinking as much as she appeared to, but Wheeler guzzled the stuff down like it was water. That was fine with Blaze. If he was drunk enough by the time they got back to his mansion on Knob Hill, he might just go to sleep as soon as he stretched out on the silk sheets of the huge four-poster in the master bedroom. If he didn't, well, it wasn't as if she would have to put up with any more than she had endured many times in the past. And in truth, Harrison Wheeler wasn't as unpleasant to be with as many of the men she had known. Certainly, he was a little rough at times when he got carried away, as could be expected from a man who had started out as a deckhand on a China clipper and risen to become a shipping tycoon whose companies reached around the globe like the fingers of grasping hands. He was utterly ruthless in business and didn't mind crushing a competitor, of whom he didn't have many these days, or an enemy. He still had plenty of those. But he treated her decently, wining and dining her in the best restaurants in the city by the bay. He lavished presents on her, including the gown she wore this evening, and the jeweled rings on her slender fingers. True, he had expected certain things from her, things that his wife, ill in a sanitarium from which she would never emerge, could no longer provide, if she ever had. But that was just business. Wheeler might delude himself that it was more than that, but Blaze never did.
Are you ready to go, my dear?
He leaned back in his chair and regarded the remains of the delicious dinner they had just enjoyed, the fine china and silver and crystal spread across the snowy expanse of white linen.
Surely you don't want the rest of that exquisite bubbly going to waste, Harrison, darling.
You're right.
Wheeler lifted the bottle to his mouth and drank directly from it, the muscles in his throat working as he swallowed. The champagne bubbled as the level in the bottle slowly lowered until it was gone.
Come along, my dear.
He was drunk. Blaze was sure of that. But he had the will and determination not to show it much as he led her from the restaurant and helped her into the waiting carriage. Even though the season was summer, this was San Francisco, and there was always a chill in the air at night, making Blaze glad for the fur wrap she wore. The carriage barely had gotten started when Wheeler put his arms around her and started kissing her, being very free with his hands as he did so. Blaze put up with it for a moment, then fended him off.
Oh, goodness! Can't you wait until we get home?
You drive me mad, Deborah. You know that. But I'll do as you wish, of course. I don't want to upset you.
And he truly did, she knew. He actually did care about her, as much as he was capable of caring about anyone other than himself. As the carriage rolled toward Knob Hill, Wheeler took out a cigar and lit it with a match he struck on an iron hard thumbnail, just as he would have when he was a sailor. He puffed for a moment and exhaled, releasing a cloud of fragrant smoke.
Where is that blasted brother of yours these days? I haven't seen him at the club for almost a week. He won a considerable amount of money from me the last time we played cards. He needs to give me a chance to win it back.
The money Martin Delroy had won from Wheeler amounted to little more than pocket change to the shipping magnate. But he didn't like losing anything to anyone, no matter how much it was.
We'll take enough from him that he'll never be able to find us. Besides, a man with Wheeler's pride isn't going to want to admit that he got taken. He'll just forget about it.
Oh, he's been busy with some sort of business deal. You know Charles. He always has so many different irons in the fire.
I like that about the man. He reminds me of me, I suppose. And he has the most beautiful sister in the world. Hard not to like him for that, too.
Martin was the one who had actually made contact with Wheeler first, wangling an invitation into a poker game that included Wheeler among its regular players. Martin had introduced himself as Charles Carrington and pretended to be a successful businessman from back east who was in San Francisco looking for a new enterprise with which to involve himself. The two men had struck up a friendship over cards. Martin could charm and persuade anyone into anything. If he had been at the Little Bighorn, he would have had Custer and the Indians sitting down to have a picnic together. From there, it was a simple step for Martin to introduce Wheeler to Blaze, telling him that she was his sister, Deborah, visiting from the family's ancestral home in New England. Once Wheeler laid eyes on her, he had been doomed. Doomed to lose a considerable amount of money, anyway. Their affair had proceeded rapidly, with Blaze putting up only token resistance. The sooner this was over, the better, as far as she was concerned. Not that she found Harrison Wheeler repulsive. It was just that sleeping with him made her feel like a prostitute. And she had believed that life was behind her when she married Martin Delroy. Since then, they had swindled half a dozen men out of various sums of money. But Blaze hadn't had to go to bed with any of them. Only tease and promise, and never go through with it. Wheeler was different, Martin said. They had to set the hook properly to reel him in. This would be the only time, he vowed. After this, they were through. The carriage turned in at the stone gate in the high fence around Wheeler's mansion. Wheeler was already snoring a little as he swayed back and forth to the carriage's rhythm. He might rouse long enough to make it inside and up to bed without any help, but then a sound, champagne-induced sleep would claim him, and she and Martin would be one night closer to the fortune they needed to escape from this life. Since he was supposed to be her brother, there was nothing unusual about Martin visiting her at Wheeler's mansion. One of the servants ushered him into the sitting room where Blaze was waiting. She stood up and went to him.
I think it's time.
Is that any way to greet your loving brother?
I'm serious, Charles. Harrison is becoming demanding.
I'm sorry, my dear, but we agreed that certain sacrifices were necessary.
He's insisting that I should marry him. He doesn't want to damage my reputation. As if it weren't already damaged by me openly being his mistress.
With the money that Harrison Wheeler has, no one is going to say too much about him or those close to him. So has he actually proposed?
Yes. I've asked him to allow me some time before I give him my answer.
Was there a ring involved?
There was.
And how much would you say it's worth? I know you have a good eye for things like that.
That doesn't matter. I'm not going to marry him. You know I can't.
If you mean because you and I, well, under the circumstances,
No! No!
Oh, you're right, of course. It's out of the question. We'll go ahead, just as you say.
Thank you.
No, thank you, my dear. You're the one who makes it all possible.
He was right about that, she thought. Without her, he had nothing. Perhaps it was time to ponder a bit more on that fact.
$50,000 is a great deal of money. A great deal.
I'm well aware of that, Wheeler, old boy. That's why I didn't want to even bring the matter up. But Deborah insisted that you wouldn't be upset. In fact, she assured me that you would be insulted if I didn't at least suggest the idea to you.
And she was right, of course. Your sister is very special to me, and you've been a good friend, Charles. Besides, this could turn into a very lucrative investment when that spur line goes through. You're sure about it?
I trust your opinion when it comes to shipping, old boy. You can trust me when it comes to railroads. No, I have no doubts about the potential of this deal. None at all.
All right. You'll have the money. I'll get my lawyer started drawing up the papers.
I'm sorry, Harrison, but I'm afraid there's no time to waste. My contacts require the money immediately and in cash. I'm sorry to say, it's an unfortunate fact of life that not everyone is as trustworthy as you and I are, and as a consequence, they don't extend that trust to others. Now, I have to meet with them later tonight, and they'll be expecting their money if the deal is to go through without a hitch.
Good Lord, man, you have to have $50,000 in cash tonight?
Well, those aren't my terms, you understand. I'm being pushed into it. However, I understand your reluctance to part with a sum like that to someone who isn't even family yet. Well, why don't you wait to give me the money until those lawyers have done their work? But I'd get them started on it first thing in the morning, though, if I were you. The longer the delay, the greater the chance that our prospective partners will become impatient and secure their financing elsewhere.
Wait a minute. You said that you're not a member of the family yet?
Martin let a rueful smile creep over his expression.
Oh, Onaf spoken out of turn.
Not at all. You know something about a decision your sister is going to make?
No, really, Harrison, I can't say any more. It just wouldn't be right. It's not my place at all. Now, if our business is concluded until tomorrow...
Wait! You really think that we might get cut out of this deal if we drag our feet?
Oh, probably not. But it's impossible to say for sure.
All right. I don't want to run that risk. I'll get the cash together. You'll have it when you leave here tonight.
You have that much money here in the house?
No, but I can make a telephone call to my banker and have it brought here. That won't be a problem. By the time you leave here tonight, you'll have that money, and we'll both be on our way to an even bigger fortune. And maybe there'll be an important change in my personal life as well.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it a bit.
Wheeler had a maddening smirk on his rugged face all during dinner. Blaze supposed that Martin had dropped hints she was ready to accept his proposal. He probably needed to do that in order to seal the deal. That was all right. She could play along for a little while longer.
I believe we're going to have a very important conversation later.
I believe so, too.
After dinner, the gentlemen retired to Wheeler's spacious study for cigars and brandy, while the ladies sipped port and gossiped in the dining room, leaving Blaze alone to navigate the dangerous waters of San Francisco society. Finally, the interminable evening was over, and the guests began to leave. Wheeler and Blaze said their goodnights together, as if they were already married. Wheeler slipped an arm possessively around her shoulders, which were left mostly bare by the gown she wore.
Harrison, dear, Charles has asked me to go back to his hotel with him this evening.
What?
I'm sorry, but he's taken it into his head that he needs to play the protective older brother. You see, he knows what I plan to say to you tomorrow, and he believes that, for propriety's sake, once our arrangement is official, it would be better for us to live apart until the time that we'll never be parted again.
Confound it! I thought we were going to settle this tonight.
One more day, dear. That's all I need.
When I asked you to marry me, I didn't think you'd be moving out.
I know, but it's just for a short period of time until we can get everything arranged suitably. A matter of weeks, that's all.
Weeks? Weeks without you? I don't know if I could stand it.
You won't be without me. I'll still see you every day. But I'd really like to get everything off to a good start, Harrison. On the right foot, so to speak. You understand, don't you?
I suppose so. Whatever you want, my dear, is what I want to. But tomorrow...
Tomorrow, we'll have brunch together in the garden and speak of serious things together.
All right.
One of the servants brought her wrap. She kissed Wheeler goodnight and joined Martin in the great marble-floored foyer. Martin shook hands with Harrison.
Here's to a bright future for all of us.
Very bright indeed.
Goodbye, my darling.
And good night, brother.
Martin winked and turned. Taking his sister's arm, they strolled toward the massive front entrance.
You have it?
In this valise.
The whole thing?
The whole thing.
We did it! We really did it. Look at it.
Blaze looked at the pile of money dumped on the bed and wanted to scoop it up and let the bills run through her fingers.
And we had better get out of town tonight. With this much money, we can travel far enough that Wheeler will never even find us. But I've heard stories about the man and what he's like when he's crossed. I really think it would be a good idea if we got as much of a head start on him as we can.
I agree.
No, I think we should be proud of ourselves. It's not everyone who can bilk a man like Harrison Wheeler. Oh, we did really good work here.
Oh!
Ugh. She was the one who had done the work. She had earned this money, not Martin Delroy. That thought was uppermost in her mind as she had struck, slamming the blackjack against his head. He landed beside the bed in a crumpled heap and didn't move as she scooped up the money, put it back in the valise, and got the hell out of there.
Is the entire Jensen family in Big Rock today? I suppose Mother will come waltzing in here next.
Lewis looked up from behind a desk covered with papers and open law books.
Well, I'm glad to see you too.
I'm sorry, Denny. It's been a busy morning, for a change. What can I do for you?
I thought maybe you'd like to have lunch with me. But now that you've mentioned it, I want to hear all about this busy morning you've had.
Our father came by earlier to talk about ranch business, but when he got here, I already had two potential clients in the office.
That's a good thing, isn't it? Having clients in the office, I mean.
Potential clients, I said. And normally, yes. However, in this case, neither of them hired me. In fact, I wound up giving legal advice to both of them, free of charge.
Well, I'm no lawyer, but that's not the way it's supposed to work, is it?
Not really. Did you happen to meet Father on the way into town? Have you already heard all about this, and are you just stringing me along?
I haven't seen him since breakfast this morning. Honest. I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
It's not good. So, it started a couple of hours ago when Messrs. Mullen and Gardner and their crew of cowpokes showed up on my doorstep.
So you think Mr. Mullen is in the right?
On the face of the evidence, he has a stronger case. That's all I can say definitively at this point. If I was going to be involved in litigating the case on either side, I'd want to conduct a thorough investigation. That would probably require taking a deposition from the surveyor who carried out this new survey for Mr. Mullen, as well as perhaps getting a corroborating survey.
Like all those second and third opinions you got from different doctors.
Exactly.
So, are you going to do that?
Do what?
Conduct a thorough investigation.
Why in the world would I do that when I don't even have a client?
So you'll be ready when one of those ranchers hires you. You don't actually think they'll just let the matter drop, do you?
I believe that's a very unlikely possibility.
Yeah, so do I. Mullen might be willing to, especially since it looks like he's getting what he wants. For now, anyway. But Roy Gardner's been in this valley almost as long as our folks. He's not the sort of man to just sit back and take it when he believes he's been done wrong.
I hate to say it, but it's more than likely that an old-fashioned range war will break out between them. And it's liable to lead to a lot of bloodshed.
Maybe you could head that off.
Head what off? The range war?
That's right.
How do you expect me to do that?
With that thorough investigation you talked about. You could find out the truth. And if the law is really on Mr. Mullen's side, and you can convince Mr. Gardner of that, I think he would back off. He may be a proddy old-timer, but he's a law-abiding man.
He always has been, at least as far as I know.
That would show folks around here how smart you are when it comes to this law business. And they'd be lining up out the door trying to hire you.
I suppose helping to prevent a range war would be good publicity.
And I could help you.
What? What do you mean you could help me?
With the investigation.
You're not a lawyer.
No, but I know how to poke into things and find out what I want to know.
You always have been pretty good about sticking your nose in other people's business, I'll give you that.
Now you're just being obnoxious. You said the man who did the new survey is in Denver.
That's right. Paget, I believe his name was.
Well, that's good enough for me.
Anyway, that fella busted a chair over my head. But that wasn't enough to knock me out, so he wailed on my skull with his gun for a spell. Well, that was a dumb thing to do. Knocked the barrel plumb out of line, he did.
They were sitting in the trees about a quarter of a mile from the waterhole, but with a good view of it. Quince Jessup, one of the pair Mullen assigned to watch the waterhole today, and a slightly older puncher named Kimbra.
After a while, that got annoying. So I picked him up and heaved him through the window of that saloon. The fella who ran the place got mighty peeved with me for breaking the glass that way, so he took a bung starter to my head and walloped me a few times. That made me sleepy, so I took a nap.
What? Wait a minute. You're telling me that you got a chair broken over your head, then a fella pistol whipped you, and finally another hombre walloped you with bung starter?
Oh, that's what happened, all right. He hit me with that bung starter, half a dozen times, I reckon.
Uh-huh. And it just made you sleepy?
Yep.
Hell, that should have busted your head all to pieces.
Oh, no. My mama always told me my skull was as thick and as hard as the Rocky Mountains. She dropped me on it ain't no telling how many times when I was a baby.
The two cowboys were sitting with their backs propped against a tree trunk. About 50 feet behind them, on the other side of the little grove where they couldn't be seen from the waterhole, their horses were tied, cropping at the sparse grass. From time to time, Quince could hear the animals moving around back there.
I don't think anybody could take all the punishment you claim you have without dying. It just ain't natural-like.
Why, Quince, I wouldn't lie about nothing like that. And that little scrap in the saloon weren't near as bad as some of the other things, like the time the beer wagon run over me, and then run over me again when the driver turned around to see what he'd hit. He said he figured there must have been a logger lying across the road. But it was just me. That was another time I got sleepy and had to lay down and take a nap.
Getting run over by a bear wagon? Twice? Didn't break every bone in your body?
Nope. I was a mite sore for a few days, though.
Where'd this happen? I'm gonna go in there and ask folks if they remember you.
Why, it was, down in Texas, maybe. Or it could have been up Montana way. I have a hard time recollecting things like that. I hope you ain't doubting what I've been telling you, Quince. It'd sure hurt my feelings if you was to think I was a liar.
Wait, hush up. Listen, you hear anything?
Oh, just them horses stomping round.
No, I think somebody's out here with us. What the? Kimbra! Kimbra! What? Damn it, two of you? Hold still, blast your hide! I'm still alive. Still alive.
Chet Holloway didn't have any trouble following the rogue bull as it tried to get away from him. It was after taking one look at him, the bull had turned and plunged into the thicket instead of attacking, as it had been known to do in the past. Instead of following directly on the troublesome animal's trail, Chet had decided to do the smart thing. He could ride around the thicket as fast as the bull could force its way through, and then he'd be waiting to dab a loop on the loco critter. Now he was on the verge of outsmarting the critter. He rounded the brush thicket and came out with a broad, open pasture stretching off to his left. On the far side of that pasture rode about 20 men coming toward him. Chet reined in sharply when he spotted them. The bull, still rampaging around in the brush, was forgotten. The riders were 200 yards away, but Chet was young and had good eyes. He recognized not only Tony Mullen, but also Ori Stryker. And he knew without doubt that that was the whole Ace of Diamonds crew he was looking at. And they were on the Box RG. The Ace of Diamonds bunch came to an abrupt halt, too. Chet felt them staring at him across the open ground. That tense confrontation lasted only a couple of heartbeats. Then Chet whirled his horse around and rammed his boot heels into its flanks. The cowpony leaped ahead and after a couple of bounds settled into a gallop. Chet looked over his shoulder and saw the Ace of Diamond riders coming. A few spurts of powder smoke told him that they were shooting at him, but at this range, with a moving target, it would be pure luck if they hit him. Bryce Rogers hadn't been to Blaze's place for several days. He had gotten a telegram from Chief Marshal Long instructing him to ride north to a small town near the Colorado-Wyoming border and locate a witness whose testimony was needed in a federal court case. Bryce didn't know what the case was about, but such knowledge wasn't necessary for him to do his job. In this case, that job turned out to be pretty tedious and not dangerous at all. It took him 2 days to track down the man he was searching for, a drifting cowpuncher who had no idea the law was looking for him. Since he wasn't in trouble, he came back to Big Rock with Bryce without putting up a fight. Bryce had watched him get on a train bound for Denver. He hoped the fella wouldn't take it in his head to slip off again. But Bryce had carried out his assignment. If anything else happened, it wasn't his fault. He headed for Blaze's place, ready for a cold beer and some pleasant company. Instead, he got a shock like a slap across the face when he stepped into the saloon. Blaze stood at the far end of the bar, her usual spot at this time of day. She wore a dark red dress cut low enough to reveal the creamy swells of her breasts. Her dark brown hair was put up in an elaborate arrangement of curls. A feather the same shade as her dress stuck up from her hair. She looked lovely and gave off a sensuous air that would take any man's breath away and make his heart pound faster. What made him stop in his tracks was the sight of the man with her. His left arm curved possessively around her waist. He was laughing about something. Bryce needed only a second to start recovering from his surprise and realize that the man standing there with Blaze was the same stranger who had come into the saloon a few days earlier and provoked such an apprehensive reaction from her. Having seen the way she looked then, Bryce couldn't wrap his head around the idea that she would have befriended the man in such a short amount of time. Especially when the hombre let his hand stray a mite so that his thumb brushed the underside of her left breast in the clinging gown. The gesture held such intimacy that Bryce immediately felt a surge of jealousy and anger. He had never been that forward with Blaze in all the time he had known her. What gave this fellow the right to do such a thing? The saloon was fairly busy for the middle of the afternoon, with a couple of poker games going on, the roulette wheel spinning, and almost a dozen men lined up at the bar drinking. Bryce put his surprised reaction aside. He wanted to get to the bottom of this, so he strode along the bar toward the far end where the two of them stood.
Howdy, Blaze. Who's your friend?
Martin Delroy. It's nice to meet you, Marshal...
Rogers. Bryce Rogers.
Welcome to Blaze's place.
Oh, I've been here before. Plenty of times.
Well, then you know what an excellent establishment it is. And please have a drink on me, Marshal.
Beer. Hello, Blaze. You look mighty pretty today.
Doesn't she, though? I'm just about the luckiest man west of the Mississippi. Or east of it as well, I'd venture.
Hello, Bryce. I haven't seen you for a few days.
I've been out of town.
On a job for the law?
That's right.
Nothing too dangerous, I hope.
As it turned out, not dangerous at all. But I'm sorry I had to leave in a hurry, since I never got a chance to say goodbye.
Well, you're back now.
The bartender placed a foaming mug of beer on the hard wood in front of Bryce.
Drink up, my friend.
Bryce picked up the beer and raised the mug in a gesture of thanks and took a healthy swallow. The beer was cold and good. That was one thing about Blaze's place that hadn't changed, thank goodness.
Mr. Delroy, a fellow wants to make a bigger bet than the house limit on the roulette wheel. Do I let him do it?
I see. I'll join you at the wheel. And Raleigh, you did well to come and get me.
He leaned over and brushed his lips across Blaze's cheek, just above the beauty mark near her mouth.
I'll be back, my dear.
Delroy slid a cheroot from his vest pocket and clamped it between his teeth unlit as he followed Raleigh Hammond toward the roulette wheel.
What in the...
Let it go, Bryce. Martin's my husband. We're married and this place is as much his as it is mine.
Now, what can I do for you?
I just expressed an interest in making a larger wager than the house limit, and this gentleman said he would have to speak to the owner. Are you Mr. Blaze?
Oh, not exactly.
But I don't understand. The sign outside says clearly that this is Blaze's place.
Indeed it is. My wife's name is Blaze. That's her over there at the end of the bar.
Oh, the very lovely woman in the dark red gown?
Well, that's right, my friend. Now I know what you're thinking. I'm a lucky man. A very lucky man indeed.
I apologize for staring.
Never apologize for appreciating great beauty. Now, how much did you want to bet?
He's been on a hot streak, boss. He's letting it ride. He's got close to $600 there. And $500's the usual house limit.
And you want to let it ride again? On black?
That's right.
Go ahead, Raleigh. All right, fellas. Get your bets down.
When all the bets were placed, he spun the wheel. Delroy watched the stranger, while in turn, the man intently watched the revolving wheel and the bouncing ball.
31. Black.
Well done, my friend. Well, that's a nice, tidy sum you've just won. Are you going to let it ride again?
I don't believe so.
Are you certain? You seem to be, as Raleigh here says, on a hot streak.
No, I don't believe in pushing my luck. Besides, I've gotten what I came in here for.
A good time. The camaraderie of like-minded souls.
Of course. What else could a man want?